And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Monday with plenty to get to over the next few hours. Coming up, we'll break down the NBA playoffs, what the Warriors are accomplishing. Is it the best of the dynasties we have seen? Plus, Justin Thomas with a big win yesterday. In remarkable fashion, Tiger Woods checks out before the final day. We'll talk about the PGA Championship coming up in about 30 minutes with Jeremy Schilling. And all sorts of things to get to throughout the afternoon. Could Baker Mayfield still wind up with the Panthers? Which quarterbacks have the most to prove in the NFL this year? I also had some random thoughts over the weekend about an ACC team and an SEC team that are very similar and both could be big surprises this year. The running back position in the NFL, something stands out there. We'll get to Deshaun Watson. And a 95-year-old is trying to improve the NFL. Got a lot of things to touch on throughout the afternoon. You can join the conversation throughout with you until 3 o'clock. 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter. At Morrow Middays, on Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email studio at KirkmanBroadcasting.com, or online at CharlestonSportsRadio.com. Head over there and click on our show page where you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at CharlestonSportsRadio.com. With you until 3 on this Monday, Trent's on the steel wheels. Trent, what's going on? How are you?
Luke, I'm doing absolutely phenomenal on this Monday. What a great weekend of sports. The Heat get it done in Boston. It was a great, great win for them. I'm feeling good. Great weekend. Nice weather out. It's a beautiful Monday here on the Morrow Midday Show. Luke Morrow.
Yeah, it sure is. Now, what happened? Do we have to play the intro twice?
We did have to play the intro twice. Yeah. It's all good. Sorry for that, folks. We were having some headphone issues.
Yeah, yeah. We must have blown some people's mind. It just started over again. They thought, "Well, wait, what's going on my radio?" Yeah, we had to get some things sorted out with the headphones. God forbid the headphones work when I come in each morning. Every day, it's a new adventure around here. It's unbelievable. And then, like, you know, there was no show. You know, Scott wasn't here this morning. So usually, if there's any issue, it gets taken care of.
Right.
No Scott this morning. I figured everything was fine. Come in, everything's not fine. I should have known better. When is it ever fine?
It's polar opposite of being fine.
That's right. And Bobby always unplugs everything at the end of his show. I don't know why. So then you got to figure it all out, and then things are anyways, it's a whole mess. You don't need to hear all about it. But we got a microphone that's not working. We got different headphones not working. But here we are on the air. We're good to go, and we got plenty to do over the next few hours. So let's dive in. With the NBA playoffs. I remember growing up, in my house growing up, my parents, you know, we were the only, they built the home way back when, in the early 80s, in the home that I grew up in. My parents have since sold it. And the TV that my father got when he first built the home was the same TV I grew up with until, I think, after college. The same TV from the 80s that my father bought. And it was the classic big box TV. You couldn't move that thing. You need to call the neighbors over, right? When he finally got rid of that thing, I don't know how he got it out of there. It was one of those huge TVs. It was from like the early to mid 80s. And at the time, it was top of the line, early to mid 80s. And at a certain point, it almost got embarrassing. My buddies would come over, we'd be watching a game. You're watching it on this box TV. And everybody has these new flat screens, and you get like your 50-inch TVs. And we had a big screen in the basement. We upgraded for the basement, don't worry. But in the living room, the TV that we watched most of our TV on, it was the big old box TV. And I'm talking until within the past decade. if you saw this thing and you were of a certain age, your mind would have been blown. And it was built in to the wall, right? You had that cutout for the TV that fit in. So that was the other issue. My father didn't really want to replace it because it had to be like the same size as that spot, which back in 1983 was a big TV. Now, right, you had to sit in front of the TV just to see what was going on compared to all these new TVs. But that TV lasted about 30 years, and it worked great. There were never any issues. Got rid of it finally when my father decided, okay, I'm going to upgrade now to a nice new TV up here. And he did. And at that point, I think I was already out of the house, or at least I was in college. It was a long time with that TV. And now these new TVs, they're great, right? You get a nice big flat screen, 60-inch maybe, you put on the wall, you get a projector screen. It's fantastic. But I can tell you, I've already gone through quite a few of these new TVs. I remember my brother burnt one out too, because there's only so many hours in one of these TVs. He used to leave it on all night when he'd fall asleep. Didn't take long. Burnt the screen out, had to go get a new one. And I think back to that TV my father had that lasted for 30 years without any issues. And eventually he got rid of it just because it was time to upgrade. But I got the job done. And you kind of forget about that old TV because it's a big box TV and you can't move it and it's a small screen. And man, we were blessed just to have HD capabilities. And it was all reliable. And I was thinking about that TV this morning because when you look at the Warriors-Mavericks series, the Warriors are about to close things out. They're up 3-0. Maybe they don't win game four, but they're going to win the series. No NBA team has ever come back down a 3-0 deficit. And Dallas is not going to be the first one. The Warriors are going to advance. And Luka Doncic is a great player. We did not overrate Luka. We did not get overly excited or over-exaggerate. None of the above. He's one of the best players in the sport. He just has no help. But through the distractions of like the new flashy TV and how exciting that is and wanting to watch Luka and what he's capable of doing, we kind of forgot about that old reliable, that big box TV that's been in my living room for 30 years getting the job done. And it seems like old-fashioned, out of style, too old. And you're not interested in that TV anymore. You want the new flat-screen, big-screen TV that's only going to last a couple of years anyways and then blow out on you. And the Golden State Warriors are that old-school TV that's just, it's just there. They're reliable. We never had to bring anybody over to repair the TV. It just sat there in the corner for 30 years getting the job done. And all the new gadgets came out you'd be all excited about. I go over to my buddy's house and they had this nice new TV. But it's not going to last 30 years for you. And the Warriors are that old school team that you kind of forgot about. They're a little bit older now. Been there, done that. They had a down year about 2 years ago. And you're all excited about all this young talent in the league. And for good reason. There's a lot of great players in the NBA, 25 or younger. The NBA's in a good spot. But you still can't forget about the old reliable. The guys who've been getting it done for a long time. The Golden State Warriors. With Curry and Klay and Draymond and Steve Kerr. And when Golden State punches their ticket, they will be going to the NBA Finals for the sixth time in the last 8 years. Now, first, let's talk about those Warriors. Here was Zach Lowe and J.J. Redick on Get Up this morning talking about what has been so impressive about Golden State to get this done. That as an older team, not a top seed in the West, here they are about to punch their ticket to the NBA Finals, and maybe not a lot of people saw it coming. This was Zach Lowe this morning.
To me, the story began at the end of last season when in the last 25 games, I think they went 15-5 going into the play-in tournament, and they looked like the Warriors again. And then they doubled down in the offseason with players, signing players who fit their style of play. So I'm not that surprised, but I do think we need to step back and just zoom out. It's remarkable that three calendar years later, with Durant gone, with Klay coming off two traumatic injuries, with Steph 34 ain't young in the NBA. Draymond Green's not young anymore. The kids, Moody, Kuminga, they're not really helping that much yet, although Moody's looked fine in this series. For them to be here, it's a really remarkable achievement.
I think it's a testament to Steph Curry. I really do. The orbit around him, his universe and everything that feeds off of that, his movement, the threat of the shot. The Warriors right now scoring 50 points per game in the paint against the Mavs. That would be the most in any series in the Steve Kerr era. And it's all based on that movement. It's all based on the threat of Steph. Every time he gets double teamed, they're shooting 60% against double teams in this series. It's all based on his greatness. And to Zach's point, like I was a guard in the NBA. When you get past 33, 34, it starts to catch up with you. What he's doing right now in this playoffs is remarkable.
Zach Lowe and J.J. Redick this morning. Now, as Zach Lowe said, 34 is not young. J.J. Redick followed that up in regards to Steph Curry. And that's what makes this impressive. The Warriors are set to go to the NBA Finals for the sixth time in 8 years. When you go back over the last 50 years, best dynasties in the NBA. I don't want to go back to the 60s, right? The Celtics made it, what, 11 straight years? There was only 10 teams in the league. Different than today. You can't really compare it. The Lakers back then, too, with Jerry West, went to 9 finals, whatever it was. So the last about 50, 55 years, once we got into the 70s, you look back, you had the Lakers, Magic Johnson and the Lakers of the 80s went to the finals in 7 of 8 years. You had Michael Jordan and the Bulls go 6 of 8 years. Now, Jordan, of course, did not play in the 2 years they didn't go, so maybe there should be some sort of asterisk there, but overall, the Bulls as a team and a dynasty went 6 of 8 years. Golden State Warriors, they're about to go 6 of 8 years. The Celtics of the 80s with Larry Bird went to the finals 5 of 8 years. So Golden State, over the last 50, 55 years, they'd be second with the Bulls of the 90s, only trailing the Lakers of the 80s in terms of finals appearances in an 8-year span. Now, the thing is, for the Lakers, it was earlier in their career, and they kept that squad together throughout. For the Celtics, right? Early in their career, as soon as Bird came into the league, and it was the same core group. The Bulls are a little more similar to Golden State in that it was later on in Jordan's career. He had been in the league for almost a decade. And that the second squad was a little bit different than the first. You still had Pippen, you still had Phil Jackson, you still had Jordan, of course. But the role players were all swapped out. And you got rid of Horace Grant, and you replaced him with a Luke Longley, and you added a Dennis Rodman, right, and a Ron Harper in there, and Tony Kukoc, and you swap all these guys in and out from the first three compared to the next three. And for Golden State here, right, you swap out a Durant, an Iguodala, a Barnes, and you move in instead a Jordan Poole and a Wiggins playing a big role, and Looney. I think Looney was there before, but you get the idea, right? You swap out the role players, and you replace them with a new group. But more than that, for the Warriors, a couple of different things that stand out. Number one, it's a banged-up crew. It was a crew that 2 years ago, when Klay Thompson wasn't playing and Curry was injured and Draymond Green was old, and it looked like, oh boy, man, this is the end of the dynasty. Almost like Tiger Woods, we'll get to that. But it almost looked like sad watching these champions now all beat up and injured and not the same players out there. And you thought like, oh, that happened quickly. Now they bounce back. But also the fact that they're doing it at this age. As Zach Lowe alluded to in that clip, the fact that Steph Curry is 34. You know, when Magic Johnson was 34, he had already been out of the league and was coaching the Lakers for about 10 games. When Larry Bird was 34, he was months away from retiring. When Michael Jordan was 34, he was months away from retiring again. Steph Curry is 34, and the Warriors are about to go to another NBA Finals and will be the favorite once they get there to go win the thing. And for Steph Curry to do it with this group, right after going through some injuries, a little bit older, banged up, couple of years removed, no Kevin Durant, that's the big thing. It's impressive for Golden State. I've heard some people already say that this is the best dynasty we've ever had. I can't go that far. I think that's being a prisoner of the moment. I think Jordan 6-for-6 is more impressive. Coming back from baseball, not playing for a year and a half, and then winning the next three championships, never losing a playoff series. I think that's more impressive. The Lakers made it to 7 out of 8. That's more than the Warriors. That's probably more impressive. We could say over the last 50 to 55 years, this may be the third most impressive. But what stands out about Golden State is that they did have a little bit of a dip. Looked like they were done. Guys were beat up, injured, and they came back older. Not as healthy. Some new pieces around them. And seemingly just as successful this year. Now, they're still going to have to go and finish off the championship. Just getting there is half the battle. But it is impressive to see what Golden State has accomplished. And the idea that, you know, this is the dynasty coming back, well, maybe it never ended. Right? Kind of like the Bulls. Jordan went away, and the Bulls did not get to the NBA Finals back-to-back years. He probably thought, like, this is over. And then Jordan came back, and they won 3 more. It wasn't that it went away and came back, right? It was just that it kind of never left. It was just they didn't have Michael Jordan. They were down for a year or two, and now they're back to winning championships. The Warriors down for a year or two, didn't have Klay. Steph Curry was injured during that time. Draymond, they were all injured. Now they come back, they're just as good as before. And as I said earlier, in the offseason, or I should say postseason, that the guy who could take the biggest hit in all of this, in the entire postseason, is Kevin Durant. Because he got swept in the first round, and now the Warriors may go and win without him. It's almost like Randy Moss. Randy Moss, to me, is probably the second greatest wide receiver of all time behind Jerry Rice. But when he went to New England, they didn't win a Super Bowl. Tom Brady has won 7 Super Bowls, 6? How many has he won at this point? Without Randy Moss. So as great as Moss was, it's like, yeah, but Brady didn't really need you. He was just fine without you. He didn't bring much to the table. I mean, he had a great year. They went undefeated in the regular season. They set all sorts of offensive records. But without Randy Moss, Brady has been just fine. And for the Warriors, same idea. Like, yeah, they won with Kevin Durant. And Kevin Durant is great. One of the best players in the league. One of the best scorers we've ever had from an ability standpoint. This is not to slight Kevin Durant. But they won before him. And now they have a chance. I'm not going to give them the rings yet. But they have a chance to now win after him all these years later. And it makes it look like Kevin Durant really wasn't all that necessary. He wasn't all that important to the operation. They won before him. They won with him. They won after him. He was just there along for the ride. Kevin Durant could take a real hit with how bad the Nets look this year. And then if the Warriors go find a way in the meantime to win another championship this year without him, like, yeah, they really didn't need you. But Durant going to Golden State, reminiscent to, I think, what Luka's kind of dealing with right now. Durant was at Oklahoma City, and he had more help around him there and couldn't get the job done. So he thought, man, I got to go to Golden State if I want to win a championship. I think the better comparison for Luka is LeBron when he was in Cleveland, carrying a bunch of bums to the NBA Finals, realizing, I don't have enough help. I can only win so much here. I have a ceiling. And leaving to go to Miami to join up with that big three to finally win a championship. I don't think Luka's going to leave Dallas. I think he likes where he is. But he's similar to LeBron early on at Cleveland, where he can only carry the team so far. And at a certain point, it's like, man, I'm getting no help from the pieces around me. For Luka, if he does want to win a championship, he may have to leave Dallas. I don't know if he's that type of player. And look, Giannis just won in Milwaukee. We thought that couldn't happen. The Raptors had to bring in Kawhi Leonard, but they finally got a championship. We didn't think that could happen. So maybe there is hope for Luka. Maybe this is an old narrative. But you look at that team last night, and you get Kleber and Bullock went a combined 0-15. They played a total of 65 minutes and didn't score. The team was outscored by about 17 points when those two were on the floor. Like, what are you bringing to the table? Luka Doncic ended with only 3 assists last night. Not for a lack of trying or effort, but because guys couldn't hit shots. 2 of the biggest players on the team went a combined 0-15 at home in the biggest game of the year. You can't fall down 3-0. For Luka, he scored 40 of their 100 points last night. He made half of his shots. The rest of the team made about a third. You can only do so much. And he's reminiscent of LeBron in those early years that you could see how good he was. He's a championship player. He just didn't have enough around him. LeBron had to go elsewhere to get enough pieces around him to go win. Luka may have to go elsewhere. Dallas has never been a big free agent destination for whatever reason. They got an owner with deep pockets who people like to play for. It's a warm state in a winter league. They're in the middle of the country, so travel's not bad. Can never get anybody. Dirk Nowitzki and Luka, they're 2 best players. Right, they drafted them or traded for him on draft night, brought him in. But Luka may not be able to get enough help in Dallas to get it done, despite how good he is. Here is J.J. Redick and Zach Lowe once again this morning talking about Luka Doncic.
When you look historically across the NBA, whether it's Steph Curry, Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, like all these guys, Giannis is a great example of this in recent memory. All these guys have had to go through some growing pains in the playoffs. The future for Dallas is so bright. They have a foundational piece where year to year, if you build the right roster around him, they can be a championship contender.
They got a big decision to make this offseason with Jalen Brunson. I feel like this playoff run has probably made that decision for them, and they should and probably will bring him back. If they do that, they're capped out for a long time, and it's going to be interesting to see how and if they tweak this roster around Luka, because as you mentioned earlier, JJ, yeah, it's great they made the conference finals. Beating the Suns is a huge accomplishment. Denver's coming back fully loaded next year. The Clippers are coming back fully loaded. Minnesota, Memphis, those teams are just going to rise and rise and rise. Like, the West is, it's going to be really hard for anyone to get out of the West going forward.
That was J.J. Redick and Zach Lowe this morning, making a good point. Right? That the West is no slouch. They're going to get better. Dallas certainly will have to get better. Luka Doncic can't do this on his own as good as he is. 40 points last night. He's been slow in the second half in the postseason. He wasn't last night. Tried to do what he could, but got very little help from those around him. And Dallas now behind 3-0 to the Golden State Warriors. We'll touch on the Heat-Celtics series later on this afternoon, coming up in the third hour. When we come back, let's talk a little golf. Tiger Woods didn't make it to Sunday. Justin Thomas with quite the comeback. Tiger Woods, unfortunately, reminds me of a great baseball player from 50 years ago, and I'll explain who that is. More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show. on ESPN Radio.
Tiger Woods couldn't make it to Sunday. It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll talk with Jeremy Schilling in about 8 minutes about the PGA Championship from over the weekend. Let's do a little golf on a Monday. I don't do a lot of golf on a Monday. We won't be on the air Wednesday because of Citadel Baseball, so that's why Jeremy's joining us today. Plus, of course, the PGA Championship ended yesterday. Tiger did not make it to Sunday. Look, he was not good on Saturday. Looked really poor. Called it quits. And I'm sure part of it, maybe most of it for Tiger, was that he was out of contention. And he doesn't need to hang around. Everybody, if you make the cut this past weekend, you got, I think it was 22,000, I think it was, for those that finished in last of those who made the cut. Tiger obviously doesn't need that money. He doesn't need to try to labor through a Sunday to secure his check for whatever, 25,000. He's doing just fine. So maybe it was something like that. Like, it's not worth putting my body through when I'm out of contention. I hope it was more of that than just simply like, I can't do this another day. He's an ultimate competitor. That's why he's out there. He doesn't have to be out there. That's why he played through the weekend, or at least got to Saturday. It was impressive just to make the cut, and what he did on Friday, went back out there Saturday, was lousy. Now, it was cold out on Saturday, colder than Thursday, Friday, and I think that's the big thing for Tiger, is that when it's cold, right, as you get older, if you've had an injury, you can relate as well. You don't do so well when it gets cold out. You get a little stiff. You get locked up. And so for Tiger, Saturday was a bit of a disaster. Called it quits. It was kind of sad, right? Almost seeing him leave with his tail between his legs. No pun intended, Tiger Woods. Do Tigers? Yeah, Tigers have tails, right? No pun intended. It's kind of sad, though, to see Tiger end in such a way over the weekend. And as I pondered last week on the show, like, I don't know if things are going to get better. Is this the best Tiger's going to be? Or the further we are removed from the accident, will he get, like, healthier along the way? I don't know. Or are you telling me this is just Tiger? This is what you're going to be the rest of your life. Now, Tiger has great doctors and great work ethic. Maybe he can improve over time. But if this is like the best, right, it's what we saw this past weekend may become the norm. But I was thinking of, you know, the baseball world, you always hear about Willie Mays. Willie Mays was one of the greatest players of all time. And Willie spent most of his career, of course, with the Giants. End of his career, he winds up going back to New York to go play for the Mets, gets traded in the middle of 72, finishes that year with them, spends 1973 with the Mets, and played in very few games that year. He was injured throughout the year. He had shoulder issues. He had knee issues. And then the Mets made it to the World Series, which, by the way, that year the Mets won the NL East with 82 wins and went to the World Series. Imagine that. They were essentially 500. Won the division, went to the playoffs, and made it to the World Series way back in 1973. That's besides the point. Willie Mays started game one in center field. And it was just a sad sight to see. Willie was 43 at the time, and he was having a hard time tracking fly balls. And there was a ball that got hit to him in the third inning that he just – it was a normal base hit that he just botched. He boxed it around out there. The Oakland A's took an extra base on him. It was just kind of sad. And baseball fans always point to that. When you talk about, for lack of a better term, like the washed-up athlete hanging on too long, you always think of Willie Mays for the Mets. He had spent his whole career with the Giants. The Giants were kind of done with him. They knew he was over the hill. Willie wanted to keep playing. So they said, all right, we'll send you back to New York where your career started. Go play for the Mets. He spent a year and a half with them. Didn't play in a ton of games. Hit 200. Committing errors out there. Couldn't track fly balls. Dealing with injuries. And it's like, oh, this is not the Willie Mays we have loved to see for 20 years. And after that game one of that World Series, when he was boxing around a couple of balls out in center field, he didn't start another game the rest of the series and retired in the offseason. But that was the end. And it was the World Series, right? And everybody was watching. He was going up against the Oakland A's. It was his first time back out by the Bay after playing for San Francisco. And it was just, for baseball fans at the time, it was like a sad sight to see. Like, this is not the Willie we remember. It's sad to see those athletes go through those physical issues. Others may point to Michael Jordan when he came back for the Wizards. And he was in his four, and he couldn't dunk anymore. He had, like, knee stiffness. And it's like, oh, man. Right? Air Jordan? It's in the name. Can't get off the ground. He can't dunk it anymore. It's sad to see Tiger as well limp his way around the course. There was a video that went viral of when he had tried to go down into like the sand trap, and he was kind of staggering and almost lost his balance, almost like toppled over, and he's limping, and he's obviously dealing with pain. It's amazing that he's even out there. I think it was Rory that said, you know, because he played with him, like, if I, judging by his reaction, if I was in that much pain, I don't think I would have made it out here at all, let alone to the weekend. So I can understand what Tiger is putting himself through. But if you're a golf fan, and certainly a Tiger fan, maybe you appreciate just having him out there. It's kind of hard to watch. Like Willie Mays in the 73 World Series committing errors out in center field, and you think, like, ah, this is not the Willie I grew up with. It's sad to see the guy not be able to perform at the level that you're used to seeing, and especially when it's not so much like the ability. Like Willie Mays in that 73 World Series put together a great at-bat in the first inning, lined the base hit. Like, he still had, you know, he still had the quick hands and a good eye at the plate. It was just his body was breaking down on him. Same idea with Tiger. Like, you could see Tiger still has the ability, absolutely. Just that his body isn't holding up for him. And when he was walking into that sand trap, right, it reminded me of, you know, like your grandfather. When they get older and maybe have to use some assistance walking, they walk with a cane, and you worry about them, like, going downstairs, right, and they take a step, and they're a little, you know, they're swaying a little bit, and you're like, oh, boy, you got to be careful. Make sure you hold on to the railing. And that looked like Tiger as he was walking down a little bit of a slope towards the sand trap. He was staggering. I thought he was going to fall over. It was sad to see. He's obviously dealing with a lot of pain, and he's obviously not the same Tiger Woods as just a couple years ago when he was still dealing with all sorts of injuries. But it's reminiscent of Willie Mays, where you see him out there and you think, like, man, this is just kind of a sad ending to see for Willie, what he looks like after so many great years. And for Tiger and everything he's gone through, it's amazing he's just out there. As I said at the Masters, that's the win. Whatever he does over the weekend doesn't matter, just the fact that he's out there playing. But this past weekend, right, had to disqualify himself, had to opt out, didn't make it to Sunday, had a terrible Saturday. Just kind of sad to see the legends struggle so much and struggle physically. Now, before we get to Jeremy coming up, here was Justin Thomas won the whole thing. It was remarkable. Won in a playoff yesterday, came out of nowhere to force a playoff, win the whole thing. Second time he's won. Here was JT afterwards talking about the victory yesterday.
It was a bizarre day. I definitely crossed one off the list, and I've never won a tournament shanking a ball on Sunday. So that was a first, and, man, I would really like it to be a last, but Bones did an unbelievable job of just keeping me in the moment today. We just tried to play the golf course for what it is, and this place is so tough. And, you know, it's funny, I was asked early in the week about what lead is safe, and I said no lead. I mean, this place is so tough, but if you hit the fairways, you can't make birdies. And I stayed so patient, and I was I just couldn't believe I found myself in a playoff.
That was Justin Thomas yesterday after his second major victory. We'll talk about it next with Jeremy Schilling, our resident golf expert. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Not with you on Wednesday. We usually have Jeremy join us every Wednesday. We won't be on the air Wednesday because we'll have Citadel baseball. Programming note, tomorrow we're only going to do about a half a show because we have Gamecocks baseball. We've reached that time of year with conference tournaments and baseball. If the teams win, who knows what the rest of the week will bring. I don't know when they may play the following days, what our schedule will look like beyond that. But what we do know is Tuesday, tomorrow, do about a half show leading into Gamecock baseball. Wednesday, no show, got Citadel baseball. We'll go from there. So we usually talk with Jeremy on Wednesdays, but you know what? It works even better because the PGA Championship just wound up yesterday, just finished up. Justin Thomas gets the win in the playoff. And so Jeremy, our resident golf expert on Twitter at Jay Shill, writes for PGA Magazine, joins us now on a Monday. Jeremy, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm still trying to piece together what happened yesterday. What a wild, wild day. And I'm glad to be here on a Monday because a lot of these thoughts would have probably fallen away by then because so much happened. And I just want folks to try to understand out there that what Justin Thomas did was historic. According to Data Golf, which is a golf probability database, he started the day with a 1.2% chance to win, and he made the turn and got to the 10th tee with a 0.1 chance to win. Hmm. And yet the dude with the trophy is Justin Thomas.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Further, further context, I saw the seven strokes back to come back. It's the largest comeback in a major since 99. And also he's tied
Paul Lawrie at the Open.
That's right.
And the famous John Vandeveld collapse. Third biggest comeback, tied for third biggest comeback in major championship history.
Yeah. So, to the best of your ability, I mean, how did this happen? Both in terms of Justin Thomas and his performance, but then I imagine you also have to get some help from some golfers around you. How do we get to this point that Justin Thomas pulled off this remarkable, historic comeback yesterday?
You really do, and it was a weird day because when you look at Pereira and Zalatoris and Cam Young, and Matt Fitzpatrick, you have a bunch of guys who have not won the PGA Tour before and who were kind of treading water. The lead kind of moved backwards, but it was kind of at 6-7 under for a while. And then Justin Thomas decided, okay, let me see what I can do here. He hits a shank on the sixth hole, a cold, fierce, honest shank. Makes the best bogey he thinks of his career. He then birdies 9, birdies 11 and 12, doesn't take advantage of 13, misses birdies opportunities at basically 14, 15, 16, gets to the 17th hole, hits it in the front bunker, hits it up to whatever it was, 3 feet, drains the putt. And then on that 18th hole where that creek in the 07 renovation, Gil Hanson, Jim Wagner brought back in that creek into play down the right side of 18. It was literally covered for plumbing purposes, Luke, part of that creek.
Mm-hmm.
So they went from, okay, let's move the plumbing. Now this is a show on HGTV, not Golf Channel.
Yeah.
And created a place for this creek to have its old purpose way back when this golf course was first designed by Perry Maxwell. And he goes forth and just drills it down there and then drills one over the flagstick, misses the birdie from a putt from 10 feet, 10 inches. And you wonder, is this going to be the end of Justin Thomas? And then Mito Pereira, who was hitting this stinger, slingy, slice thing all week, goes to 18 with a one-shot lead. And I know that he said that he was decisive with the move. He said that he had confidence. I've seen a lot of people on Twitter say he played the right club. Whether you agree with driver or not, my problem with what Mito did was that he did the cardinal sin of major championship golf, which is to slow down. He failed to slow down. Yes, you need to keep your normal pace and your normal routine, but you need to take a breath and figure out, okay, is this the right shot? Justin Thomas and Jim Bones McKay spent like 3 minutes on the 18th tee trying to figure out which of JT's various tee shots does he have in his arsenal that would be best. Mito went up there, just swiped it, lost it right into the creek, takes a drop, next one over the green left into an impossible spot, and failed to get up and down for bogey to get into the playoff. And then Zalatoris, who birdies 17 and makes a really gutsy putt from 8 feet 8 inches on 18 to get into the playoff, ends up in the playoff. I'm still gutted, and my heart still breaks for Mito Pereira. The dude did not play very well yesterday and hung around and made epic par saves at 9, 10, and 11. Just these up and downs out of no man's land to keep himself in this golf tournament. And to do that, trying to become the first Chilean major champion would have been epic. And I still think he has a really bright career. He's on the PGA Tour via a battlefield promotion. Those have only happened 12 times in the history of the Korn Ferry Tour, winning 3 times in the same season. So you end up now in this playoff between JT and Will Zalatoris, and Justin Thomas decided to just slam the door. Hits a perfect 75-yard wedge on the first playoff hole, the par 5 13th. When they go birdie-birdie, he drives the green on 17 and a shot from the Goodyear blimp that will be replayed for generations. He makes birdie. Zalatoris fails to get up and down for birdie from short right of the green, and then plays another great slinger on 18 and forces Zalatoris's hand. He hits it to the front of the green, doesn't get the birdie putt to fall, and JT had just 2 putts to steal the victory. And next thing you know, he's in his fiance's mom and dad's arms. A tremendous win for Justin Thomas, who had not won yet this season, although he felt like he was close on multiple occasions. PGA Tour win number 15 for Justin Thomas, who now is fifth in the FedEx Cup standings, but more importantly gets that second major, that all-elusive second major to go with this title in 2017.
Yeah, talking PGA Championship with Jeremy Schilling on Twitter at Jay Schill. Let me ask you about the those runner-ups that you mentioned there first with Mito. You know, first time he had made the cut, you know, at a major. He's only 27 years old. He's still so young in all this. Tough day yesterday. I always say in cases like this, you know, that it depends on your perspective, I guess. And the analogy I use, and it's probably not a perfect one, but like if you go to the casino with $100 in your pocket and you get that up playing whatever game you want to say $1,500, but you don't walk away from the table, you lose some of that stack, you end up walking out with $800. Are you ticked at yourself that you could have even more money, or are you pleased that, hey, I walked in with $100, turned it into $800? And my point being for Mito, if you told him at the start of the tournament, the event, hey, this is where you're going to finish up, I'm sure he'd be thrilled. Now, if you told him how Sunday was going to go down, I'm sure you're very disappointed. So my question for you, with how things went for Mito this week, I'm like, how do you feel if you're Mito Pereira today? Are you crushed that you let that slip away yesterday, or are you encouraged that, like, hey, at least I was there on Sunday with a chance to win this thing when nobody thought that would actually happen?
We did not prep for that question, but boy, was it a perfect question, because Amanda Baliones on CBS, who, by the way, said such a great thing, and by the way, her married name now is Amanda Renner. I have to get used to saying that, yeah, since I've known her now for 4+ years. She said, and it's important to remember this, if you are not the winner, you are under no obligation to say yes to the media. None, by rule. He said yes to every single interview yesterday. And he said, my goal when I came here on Monday was to make the cut. On Sunday, my goal was to win. I'm sure I'm disappointed, but just think about that, Luke. To your point, on Monday, the goal was just to make the weekend and get in the money. And then it changed, obviously, on Sunday. This is a learning experience for a guy with a world of talent who is thought of so highly by his South American peers. So he had the right attitude. He had, you know, quote, and this is what he said in the press conference, it's not how I wanted to end up this week, but really good result. Played really good today. I was just nervous. I tried to handle it a little bit, but it's really tough. I thought I was going to win on 18, but it's what it is. We'll have another one. Whether that's window dressing or just, you know, the way he's saying it publicly to try to convince himself of that, we'll see. We'll see how he rebounds. But needless to say, he's a guy with a bright future, and I think he walks away more optimistic than a guy like Rory McIlroy, who now realizes that he had this one, you know, potentially if he could have done anything on the weekend, anything on the back nine for that matter, Rory could have gotten something and went the wrong direction. Jordan Spieth, same thing. If he could have just hung around, this would have gone the wrong direction. I think for those guys, this matters more than for Mito, who's got such a long, bright future ahead of him.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. Will Zalatoris, the other one I wanted to ask you about, you touched on him earlier. You know, you lose in that playoff, but you're still encouraged by Zalatoris and what he may have ahead of him.
Got one of the best starts to a major championship career on the men's side without a win. Two runner-ups and a sixth, plus whatever else that I'm forgetting. It's really impressive what he's done. He needs to fix two things. Number one, his driver got very inconsistent on the weekend. Yes, it was tough to drive. Cold wind, especially Saturday, Sunday when the weather turned, and we'll get to that with Tiger momentarily. But for Will, that and the short putting, he putted his brains out on Thursday, Friday, just way above his tour average. The short putting stroke still looks herky jerky. You get on non-perfect greens the rest of the year, we'll see how that plays out. But in terms of Will, the first PGA Tour win in the first major are not that far away. This is a guy who rises up in major championships like Brooks Koepka. It's very Koepka-esque. And who knows where this will take him next specifically, but I still think there's a lot of upside for Will. And you saw Will clap there for JT. I mean, he just got outplayed in the playoff. He didn't lose that thing. He got completely outplayed. If you want to talk about where Will lost it, you know, go back to, you know, the second hole, the third hole, the fourth hole, you know, and even if those holes were okay, like, that's my point. He can look back on the actual regulation round as places where he had issues, not the playoff. He has got outplayed in the playoff, and that's how people want to lose majors. You don't want to lose it. You want somebody else to beat you.
Right, yeah, makes sense. You mentioned Tiger, of course. I have to ask you about him. He had a tough Saturday, didn't make it through the weekend. Just what are your thoughts today on Tiger? Where do we go from here after what you saw this past weekend from Tiger out there playing for the second time since the accident?
You know, I tweeted on Friday night that the grind that he put on to make the cut was one of the most incredible grinds I've seen from Tiger. In pain, gutting it out, one under over his last five or six, I think it was, to make it, and the clutch par saves and the whole nine yards. But this was a man that was clearly in pain, and this is on a flatter, easier-to-walk golf course than Augusta National. And I said, I don't know what this is doing for him long-term. And then you get the cool temperatures, the tight turnaround from Friday to Saturday, and you get a guy that looked like he was old and had a serious medical issue. Now, ESPN has a shot of him misstepping on a rake. Who knows what that could have done? We have reports, not reports, but just people who think he might have tweaked something on Thursday because of the way he was walking. What it is abundantly clear to me is that the Tiger we saw on Sunday and Monday especially was not the same Tiger who competed in the event. He had no point in playing on Sunday. He made the right decision. He was going to be first off again. He was in the 40s. There was no point for him playing on Sunday. He doesn't need the money. He doesn't need the FedEx Cup points. He doesn't need the world ranking points. So I totally agree with stepping away there. What would I do next? I would not play the U.S. Open, and I would gear up for the Open Championship. St. Andrews is flat. And when I say flat, the Swolcan Bridge, the famous bridge that you cross over on the 18th hole where you've seen 10 billion, you know, photos from, that's the most elevation change on that entire golf course, is that one bridge. That's a man-made bridge. The entire golf course is flat. That is where Tiger should go next, in my opinion. Can 4 weeks be enough to get him ready for a U.S. Open? I don't think so. I think what's also really interesting is that he withdrew from the PGA of America. Withdrew through the PGA of America. He authorized his manager, Mark Steinberg, to comment to the reporters on what Tiger was, dealing with, which we know was pain, discomfort, plus the short turnaround and cool temperatures. But he himself has not put any kind of a statement out there. And I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad sign, but I would not be surprised if a visit to a doctor is in his future to try to figure out what else is going on. He is in a position, Luke, where he can, if he's not careful, aggravate another part of his body that was not hurt in the accident while compromising for the limitations of the right leg in the accident and foot, for that matter. I don't know if that's the case. But Heat is his friend. This week was not. And he looked his best on the hottest days of the week. And then as soon as it got cooler, he looked like he did at Augusta. Bad weather draws and just not healthy golfer right now. And it's sad to watch. It's sad to see. But the dude does not know how to say no. That's the bottom line when it comes to Tiger.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. We have to run. He's our resident golf expert, Jeremy Schilling, on Twitter, at Jay Schill. Writes for PGA Magazine, breaking it all down on a Monday about the PGA Championship over the weekend. Appreciate it as always, Jeremy. We'll wrap up Hour 1 next. It's the Mara Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
on the Morrow Midday Show. I realize what you gotta do. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now.
Backbeat, the word is on the street that the fire in your heart is out. Wrapping up hour one of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Jeremy Schilling breaking down the PGA Championship. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Yeah, I think he laid it out well in regards to Tiger Woods. As I said earlier, it's like Willie Mays. Pick your favorite athlete. Maybe Michael Jordan when he was playing for the Wizards, where it's kind of sad to see where they just clearly not themselves, but they are too competitive to not be out there or don't want to say goodbye or think they still have something. And Tiger, it's a little bit different because of what he's coming back from. Willie Mays was just wearing down at the end of his career. Jordan, right, didn't come back from some sort of serious injury. He was just old and a little bit over the hill at that point. It's kind of sad to see. Now, in terms of Mito Pereira, he was the number 100 player, had a chance to win yesterday. Could have won $2.7 million if he got a par on 18. Instead, had a double bogey and finished with $870,000. So you could say in that one hole, he lost $1.8 million. But as I said, it's about perspective. Going in, nobody expected him to win $870,000. So are you crushed that, like, oh, man, I had a chance to win and I blew it, and that cost me almost $2 million? Or are you pleased, like, hey, nobody thought I would ever be here in this situation. I made the cut at a major for the first time. Still walk away with almost $1 million. Finished in, what, third? Still played well up until the last couple holes. About perspective, I suppose. He should still be pleased with the weekend overall and the job he did, even if he didn't finish it off. Hour two coming up next. We'll shift to football.